might as well start. Today we have Mr. Kranz, Mr. Hutchinson, the GNC, and Mr. Holloway, the Flight Activities Officer. Gene, you want to?
Okay, today was a rather quiet day. We picked up on Rev 64, and we had about three major items facing us: the SPS-6 burn that we're using to lower perigee. It's actually one of two maneuvers we use in setting up our final orbit for reentry. We had the SO-65 run, and we had a landmark tracking task, the latter of which is in work right now. The crew had been awake for about 3 hours when we came on board, and they were going through the process of their platform alignment. We talked to them, and this, I believe, eventually led to another discrepancy we had later on. We talked to them about some of the configurations we'd like from a standpoint of quad management to get some better balancing upon of our RCS propellants. Over Texas at 117.51, got a report in the hatch windows. All the hatch windows were good. During the night, for some reason, we were unable to command the data system on board the spacecraft. We did some troubleshooting there and found out that either we had a switch out of position, the up telemetry command switch, or we had an intermittent in the switch. We had the crew cycle the switch, and it seemed to be working okay. We talked about the performance of the fuel cells and the effect of fuel cell purges upon the condenser exhaust temperature. And based on this discussion, we advised the crew that we feel we should go ahead and perform our normal fuel cell purges. Over Canary Islands, at the beginning of the 75th Rev, we talked to the crew about their biomed harness and troubleshooting of the biomed harnesses. And if I believe I'm right now, I believe we have all data back and all crew members. I believe they made some sensor changeouts and they had some spares on board that they swapped. Came the 75th Rev was essentially normal. And the 76th Rev, we talked to the crew. They were having some problems with their optics and performing their platform alignment. This had been reported twice previously, and it was giving them some problems in their alignment, and as such, at that time, I anticipated that we might have to delay the SPS-6 one rev to allow them to obtain their alignments. However, it seemed everything later on over Carnarvon was okay. They had completed their platform alignments, and we dropped the planning on slipping SPS-6 one rev. Over Honeysuckle, we talked to the crew on the optics problem, and apparently we have a hang-up somewhere in the gear train. That was basically about it until we got back to the States. Stateside pass was normal. And we started going over the configuration for the burn over Carnarvon. Making sure that we got the various circuit breakers in the spacecraft closed that we had opened due to troubleshooting procedures earlier in the day or from the previous night. In addition, we talked over the SO-65 experiment and the weather with the crew. Over Tanana Reef, we had the crew go to PCM bitrate high, and the SPS-6 burn was going to occur within about 50 seconds of Carnarvon acquisition, and we would not have time to get the commands in and be in high bit rate for the burn. They came up over Carnarvon. We acquired about 121.48 or shortly thereafter. The spacecraft looked okay from the snapshot of data we saw. At about 120.148, and I forget what the exact time was. Excuse me, it was 1:23. Sorry, 1:23:25. That's the next SPS pad. That was the second bird.
So
Okay, anyway, we got over Carnarvon. And the crew advised us that they had aborted the burn because they did not have ullage. And very shortly thereafter, Neil checked the digital autopilot configuration and identified that based on the data we had seen after they had aborted the burn, that it was not configured properly for the burn. We talked this over with the crew and advised them we'd take a dump of the telemetry from on board the spacecraft over the States and take a look at the DAP. This is a pretty complex procedure in initializing the DAP, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't have any problems in the digital autopilot before we gave them the go for the next burn. Came back up over the States. We took the dump of the telemetry data. The DAP looked okay. We could see no other problems in it, so we decided to go ahead and reattempt the burn at Carnarvon on the subsequent revolution. We gave them the nav vectors and the target vectors for the burn, gave them the go over Ascension in the 78th rev, and over Carnarvon, performed the burn. The burn was about 1.5 seconds long. Our ephemeris after the burn roughly is 120.2 by 105.4. As soon as we finished that, we had about 50 minutes, I believe it's more about 30 minutes, to get ready for the SO-65 experiment. And we had to pass the crew more data to get into the attitude for the burn. In this particular one, we overlooked the alignment of the platform. We believe the platform was aligned, I believe, small end forward, and I believe it turned out to be aligned blunt end forward for the burn. And as such, when they set in their earth rate for SO-65, when they set in their earth rate, they were torquing in the wrong direction. So they took over manual control and completed that particular experiment. And that's basically about it. We closed out about the time they were performing their landmark tracking over the west coast of the United States. That's all I have.
Bill?
And would it be correct to say that both of these anomalies today were the result of human frailty rather than mechanical failure?
The latter one for certain was, and that was just a function of making sure that we had a correct knowledge of the platform alignments prior to the time we passed the crew the data. The first one we cannot be sure of. We just don't have the data. Let me give you, tell you what our problem here is. In the digital autopilot, when we're in low bit rate, we see the operation of the autopilot essentially once every 12 seconds, every 10 seconds. When the crew is setting up the configuration of the autopilot for the burn, they're flashing through there. Actually, it's fantastic the way they work with that device. And with the data rates we've got in the autopilot, we cannot generally perform troubleshooting using low bit rate telemetry. So we can't be sure.
Would it be your judgment, your considered opinion that it was procedural error in putting information into the DAP?
No, as far as we know, the data he entered into the, let's put it this way, the data he entered into the register for the DAP was correct. We did not see him enter that data into the autopilot, but he had loaded it properly. When I say loaded, I'll let Neil talk about that, but he had set in the data into the computer. He then has to enter it as a discrete step in order to transfer that over so it can be used or worked upon. We did not see him, and again, this is a function of the data rate. We did not see him perform that entering function.
I don't understand what you did differently the second time you attempted the burn than you did the first time.
We don't think we did anything differently.
Gene, maybe we ought to explain what was wrong with the autopilot. It's a pretty simple thing. The reason they didn't do the burn was because they didn't get ullage. Okay, and the what we had done prior to this burn, we had the autopilot set up with quads C and D off. Okay? And as Gene said when he was running through his briefing, the reason we had quads C and D off is we're trying to pump them up a little bit because they were coming down a little close to some red lines, some deorbit red lines. They aren't anymore, by the way, since we did the burn, but they were at the time. Now, after one of the things that we have to do when we set the autopilot up for a burn is tell the computer what jets to fire for the ullage maneuver. Okay? And we told it, there are two things you tell the autopilot. One, what jets to fire, and you also tell the autopilot what quads are good and what quads aren't. In two different, those are two completely different steps. We told the computer we wanted to do the ullage with quads B and D. Okay? We also told the computer that quad D, C and D were failed or were off. Now when you tell a computer two conflicting pieces of information like that, it's smart, it does nothing. So when he hit the T-handle, he got no ullage. And we did check the DAP. Unfortunately, we didn't have acquisition at Carnarvon in time to pick it up before he was into the ullage procedure.
All right, then what I don't understand is how the DAP was told B and D and C and D, how it got this conflicting information.
Okay, now this is the thing that Gene was talking about. Now, when we went back and tried to verify when they were setting the DAP up for the burn, okay, we had it configured for C and D off before the burn, and that was correct. We were using it that way, okay? We were only using quads A and B. Now, he had to go back in there and reset it up to turn quad D on in the DAP so we could do a BD ullage. And we saw him do that. Now, the procedure that you go through, when you put data in the computer, you're probably familiar with the DISCI and the thing you punch the data in. You punch it up, and through a series of entries, you get the data in the registers. Okay, then you hit an enter. Now the computer doesn't act on the data till you hit the final enter. In other words, it doesn't go into working memory till you hit the final enter. Okay, now on low bit rate data, like Gene said, we can't see everything. Now we saw him punch up the proper configuration for a BD translation. We did not see the final enter that put that data into the working memory of the computer because of the sample rates on our PCM.
Okay.
So as far as verifying any procedural errors on the part of the crew or anything else, there's no way to do it. And he immediately reset it up after the burn was aborted with no problem whatsoever.
Okay, I just want to finish on this. Was there sufficient propellant reservoir in the sump tanks so that you could have done a burn anyway without ullage if they'd have to? And also, were you low enough in a low enough orbit at that point such that if you had a total SPS failure, we could have re-entered with RCS?
Okay. First, let's talk about SPS failures. No ullage is not an SPS failure, and any critical burn can be done with no ullage, and retrofire is a critical burn. We are in a condition in our propellant tanks that we, for non-critical, in other words, the everyday type burn like we were doing today in orbit adjust, we require ullage to settle the propellants. However, if that had been retrofire, we would have gone ahead and lit her up with no problem whatsoever.
Come back here to Sanders.
There's nothing like a SPS to ullage the propellants down.
I'm just not... just one thing. When you fail to get the RCS, you got no ullage. What stopped the SPS? The DAPs or the astronauts?
Oh no, the procedure that we go through when we light a burn off under autopilot control, in order to proceed with the burn, he starts the ullage at 18 seconds prior to ignition by pushing the T handle in, and at 5 seconds prior to ignition, the computer sort of stops and it flashes a verb noun combination and says, "Do you want to go on with this maneuver?" And if he wants the computer to light the engine off, he hits proceed. If he doesn't want to light her up, he just doesn't do anything, and he, or he hits recycle and it goes back to ignition minus 5 seconds, or he hits verb 34 and it goes out of the ignition program. In other words, the crew did not
elected not to continue,
and he didn't hit the proceed when he got to ignition minus 5 seconds, so the autopilot did not light the engine. The computer didn't light the engine.
Somewhat more mundane subject. There are now something like 7 pieces of the Apollo mission unconnected with the command and service module still floating around. I'd like to find out
what are they,
if I could, what the decay or lifetimes of these things are. As I understand it,
man, I got one number.
The S4B SLA is in a heliocentric orbit with a lifetime of millions, if not billions, of years.
Yes.
Correct?
Certainly sounds.
I'll believe that.
Okay. All right. Now, we have 4 panels from the SLA. Their lifetime is something on the order of 2 to 3 weeks?
I'd guesstimate that that's probably a pretty good number, too.
All right. All right. Now, there is the descent stage, and the descent stage has a lifetime of 2 to 3 weeks. Is that approximately correct?
I think that's right too.
Right. And
I can tell you what the ascent stage lifetime is.
Proceed, sir.
That's what you should ask for. It's 6,904 days, 23 hours, and 41 minutes, if you'd believe that.
Does that translate to 19 years?
I don't know what 6,904 days is. 6,904 days, 23 hours, and 41 minutes. And I can't believe anybody would write those numbers down. That's 6,904. Like I say, the 23 hours and 41 minutes, I think somebody's playing a joke on me, but that's what they wrote.
No seconds. What's the last one, Dick? 4, 5, 6, 7.
That's right. Any more questions?
Do you have any estimate on the lifetime of the command?
No, but I'd say it's about 10 days.
If I...
What was that, though?
From liftoff. Go ahead, Jack.
If my estimate's correct, if my estimate's correct, you're running a little bit ahead of the timeline on the flight plan, and yet the splash time they gave us is about a half hour late. Can somebody discuss that?
Tommy?
Well, look in the
I don't think we're really running 30 minutes ahead on the timeline. It's 5 minutes? Yes? The SPS burn was not quite at the nominal time this morning, but that was because of the relative position of the orbits. And as far as the timeline is concerned, we're running a little late with respect to the stations. Hey,
do ask the crew whether they the oil slick. I didn't ever hear a reply. Did y'all catch one?
We didn't. I didn't hear any reply either. We had asked them that, and I'm sure that's one of the things we're going to be looking for.
Lee Holly.
Do you know if they have used the rangefinder that they took on board, and are they planning on using
COAS?
It?
No, I don't believe they used the COAS that they brought back.
I think she's talking about the diastimeter, isn't she? Did David?
I'm talking about the rangefinder.
Oh, the diastimeter.
It's not known as that anymore.
Okay. Okay. When you said they brought on board, I thought you meant they brought back from the limb to the CSM to see if it was going to work. That was the cause. I believe they probably did during the terminal phase of the rendezvous. Yeah.
Let's get Ev Clark back here.
When McDivitt reported trouble yesterday using the COAS, is it, from what you know of it, was it because of bright sunlight, bright background, or was it a failure in the instrument? The ground-to-air doesn't make it clear, but there's a PAO comment later that indicates it was sunlight, a brightness problem outside.
Well, it was, Tommy might be able to answer a bit on this. It was my indication that the reticle itself was not sufficiently illuminated. Now, that could be taken many ways.
I think you can... you heard two comments on that, one when he first manned a limb on the day of the rendezvous and one when he was trying to dock. And when he was trying to dock, he could not see the image in the COAS, and that was the reason we brought the COAS back, be able to look at it post-flight and see if it failed or it was just designed inadequately.
It's a mechanical problem in the COAS or whether it was a question of sun being sort of
we feel that it was either a failed COAS or an inadequately designed COAS.
I get the impression that there was some special request for the pictures of this oil slick. Is that true, and perhaps is that from another government source, such as the Interior Department?
No, this was part of the SO-65 experiment. And it was just an item of curiosity of mine, more than anything else.
Yeah. Gene, could we go back to this business of aligning the platform wrong end forward? You said this was, for certain, a human error. Can you explain to us how this happened? What is involved?
Here we go again. I guess we can take this one completely upon ourselves. It wasn't a matter of aligning it backwards or anything. The platform, we've only aligned it once today, and we aligned it for the burn, okay? And then we were trying to use it for this SO-65 thing, and it turned out that we had it pointing one direction, and the numbers that we put into the autopilot to use with SO-65 assumed it was oriented the other direction, 180 degrees out. And so it was just frankly, it was a procedural goof up on the ground.
Well, was it due at least in part to the fact that after the burn, under the revised burn program, after the burn you wouldn't have had time to realign?
No.
Can you
I don't think there was a realign schedule, was there, Tommy?
No, sir. We had not planned to realign the platform between the burn 6 and the SO-65.
Tommy, I don't think we were going to do the SO-65 with a DAP to begin with. Okay?
So if burn 6 had, if burn 6 had happened on schedule, this business of the drift in the platform would still have happened. Is that correct?
Probably.
All right.
It's not a drift in the platform, by the way. There's absolutely nothing wrong or anything else. If we would have put the right numbers in the computer, it would have done the right thing. The numbers that we used were for a platform going the other direction. And like I said, it's just a procedural goof-up, and next time we do it, and we are going to do it again. And by the way, it worked beautifully. The vehicle pitched right up, going the opposite direction.
Just have them
to
override it and do it manually.
Well, we just had him slip out of autopilot control, and then he just tweaked it on down. And
I want to make sure I understand this.
You're gonna
and you gave it commands for it being a mode with the command module front.
The platform, in order to work properly with the way we were doing it, the platform, let's see if I can put it in simple terms, has to be aligned posigrade, if that makes any sense to you, with the x-axis of the platform in the direction of orbital motion, V cross R. Right. The y-axis of the platform, north, okay? For the burn, we had it oriented the other direction with the x-axis of the platform retrograde. So the thing that got us was the y-axis of the platform, in other words, the axis that you pitch around, was going south instead of north, so the bird pitched the wrong direction.
Go ahead. I'm going back to yesterday, if I may, when the Apollo 9 and the lunar module were undocked. Were there any backpacks aboard the lunar module?
Were there any what aboard the lunar module?
Backpacks.
Aboard the lunar module.
Those used for EVA.
There was one PLIS and two OPSs. One of the OPSs was not working. We had two devices by which we could transfer extravehicular back to the CSM if we had had docking problems. Yes.
That's all.
Yeah.
Were those all left aboard the LIM?
Yes.
Yes.
And a related question, there was discussion a couple days ago about stowing a lot of garbage in the LIM and using it as a garbage can to get rid of things that they didn't need any longer once they got through using the LIM. Do you know whether they did that? Did they put a lot of stuff from the command module over into the LIM?
Yeah, they apparently had a number of items. I have an estimate somewhere in here. They apparently have a bag that they can lash down. It had generally low, high volume, low bulk, or low mass type items.
Food bags and things like that?
I believe that was part of it, yes.
The best we can estimate, I think we gained 5 pounds rather than losing any because we ended up bringing some extra stuff back. I think we brought back a camera, and, of course, we brought the COAS back that we hadn't planned on. So we ended up about 5 pounds gaining rather than actually losing weight out of the command module.
Could I ask one more question about Ullage? Do I understand that that with the SPS, when you don't have liquid hydrogen engine, but with the SPS type engine, that you only really need Ullage for the small burns, for these little burns, and for a big major burn, you don't really need it?
No, that's not correct. What I said was, if we had to burn the engine. Well, let's talk about what Ullage does. Ullage settles the propellants down in the tank, and the reason you want to settle the propellants down in the tank is you don't want to get any helium, the pressurant that you use, ingested into the engine, okay? Now, the real criterion is that if you don't, after we get down to where we're on just the sump tanks, in other words, the storage tanks are empty, and we have Ullage or helium in the tank that's directly feeding the engine, you stand the chance, if you don't ullage, of taking some helium into the engine. Now, burning helium, ingesting helium into the engine in itself is not any serious thing. It's on the subsequent engine start, after you have done a no-ullage start with the sump tanks, that you might run into problems. And the obvious thing there is, suppose you had a glob of helium right down there at the engine valves when you start it up. Then you start, now you're messing around with the lead lag ratio of fuel to oxidizer when the engine lights up.
Okay.
So it's the subsequent start that bothers you. Now, if it's a critical burn like retrofire, there's no subsequent start. No.
Yeah, but I mean, it would have to be a critical burn in the sense of the last burn you wanted out of the SPS on the mission in order for you to take a chance like that. Right.
Yeah, you could define it as that.
Well, do you?
Well, it depends on what kind of a situation you're in. Suppose you were in a rescue situation.
Supposing you were on your way back out of lunar orbit.
Let's put it this way. If I were in that case to get Neil off the hook, I would have no qualms in relighting the engine. Okay, and it's really a function of what are the trade-offs? What's the risk involved in not lighting it, okay, as opposed to lighting it? Okay, that plus the fact is that, as Neil says, there is some conservatism in these numbers. We prefer not to. We prefer to live by the rules of the game, which says you generally don't relight it, okay, and you always try to have all each starts. But when it gets down to the short strokes, you're going to use that engine. You're going to use it when you need it.
Yeah, no.
What is the risk in relighting it with the helium down there?
Well, that's I don't know whether we'd even say there's a genuine risk in it. If you got you're playing a probability game here that you've even got any helium down there, you have to get it through screens and back up through a It's real difficult to imagine that you could ever get propellant down that far. And even if you did, the fact that the propellant would be right next to the ball, to the engine valves, so that you'd get a slug of helium out and mess up the oxidizer fuel ratio right at ignition, you've got to add that on there. And you could have a rough start is the consequence.
Nothing catastrophic for you.
You're going to push me, right? I don't know, Gene.
Yeah, I'd say there is a remote possibility.
Oh, it's way out.
Okay.
And that's
if it got
about
bad enough.
Say.
The likely event would be simply a rough engine start.
The most likely event would be a very smooth start.
Oh,
with
yeah.
no problem
yeah,
at all.
That's the best thing.
Right. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.